Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I was just planning on using my old one until I heard something.
I got an email, said, you know, you can order them. And I thought, I'm not even going to send out an email anymore because everyone wants one, of course. Obviously, right?
Yeah.
So I just ordered them.
Well, thanks for being on top of it.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome to our work session of our Morgan County School Board meeting tonight. And we're so very, very happy to have Marcus here from USBE. And he's been with us before and just does an excellent job of school land trust training. And since we're at the beginning of a new year, that's where we're going to start. So, Marcus, I'll turn the time over to you.
Okay, great.
And you can have at it.
Appreciate it. Thank you. It's nice to be speaking to a sold-out crowd. So
yeah.
It's good to be back. It's nice to, I think this kind of marks the whole year of being with USBE for me. And so you guys are kind of my first school board training that I remember. So it's nice to be back with you guys. A lot of this will look much the same. Hopefully, I'm going to share a little bit more resources with you guys to kind of help with the process. Board members do have three specific pieces of literature in front of you. The first one is a packet that is a timeline that's specific to you guys and your roles as school board members. It's a checklist of different requirements broken up by month. Talking to Andy, it sounds like you guys are taking more of a structure where you guys will each be overseeing the school, kind of being involved that way. So hopefully that new resource can be helpful for you guys in the process. The other two resources we'll be covering a little bit more in detail are the Rules of Order Procedure, as well as a checklist for website requirements. These are going to be kind of more your fall requirements and things to kind of look out for. I didn't want to give you guys the whole binder of everything today, so today we'll just be kind of focused on those things, as well as some of the plan review stuff and the responsibilities that you guys have as board members. As principals come in, I'm going to give you guys these. So you guys will have the checklist of rules of order procedure as well as the website requirements. But then I'll also be following up with the timeline for principals as well. So that's something that we're rolling out this year, just timelines that each user has access to. So hopefully that will help and also kind of serve as a communication point, so when I'm not here or when Kira's not here, you guys are able to kind of refer to those resources throughout the year. So let's jump into our Morgan School Board training here. There's three main topics. We'll be talking about kind of the history of trust lands and how the system works. And then we'll also be talking about just a quick program overview of your responsibilities. So today's, I think the last time I was here, we kind of geared it towards principals and kind of the plan. Today, we'll be kind of facing this way towards you guys as school board members and kind of talking about how you guys kind of support the principal role throughout the year and also some things to look out for there. I will also be kind of referring back to your guys' plans from last year. I was the one who actually got to your guys' review, so we'll have kind of a deep dive into that as well.
Oh, cool.
And kind of talk about what are some things that I noticed. To be honest, this district did a great job. The one thing that we're going to talk about is council vote numbers, just because that was kind of a hiccup point, not just for Morgan, but I think across the state. And so my big project this year is to kind of address that issue and say, hey, here's a clarification for what you're reporting in that number. And how we can kind of streamline it. So, any questions so far? Cool. Let's jump in. So, if you'd like to scan QR codes. It's funny, I got to do a PTA event a couple of weeks ago, and as soon as you show a QR code, just like see a phone. It's kind of funny. It's a really funny thing. So, if you guys would like to follow along and get a digital copy of this, I will also be sending it to Andy after, so you guys have that resource for you. Your little toolkit. So before we start, I wanted to kind of,
I missed it.
You guys probably know this. I like to contextualize.
Do you want to go back one?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like, we weren't fast enough.
I will stall a little bit longer.
I think it's too far away. Is that the problem?
No problem. I realize it's, you know, it's really the QR code that's really more important than this.
I don't know. I think it's too far away, even though it's huge.
Oh. Hopefully.
We'll get it.
We'll get it. Okay. So, you guys, a year ago, I asked a question at the beginning. I like to ask these questions just to help contextualize what we're talking about. So I have a new opening special question. Is what helped you learn a new subject or a new skill? And how might this relate to what your schools are doing at the local level? So I'm going to give you guys 30 seconds to kind of talk to the person next to you, or you guys can work in a group of three, whichever you prefer, and just discuss these two questions. What helped you learn a new subject or a new skill? And how might this relate to the schoolwork that you guys are doing now? Give you guys 30 seconds, and we'll come back.
We'll do a three. We'll do a three.
Hey. All right.
I call Scott.
Well, it's 2-2, so you can't leave me alone. I have to
say it. I park across the street.
That's what I do. I
call Scott. That's how you learn
it. Oh, that's how you learn a new skill. I get it now.
We're supposed to answer this question. How are you doing?
Huh?
I said, how are you? We're supposed to answer this I can't think of a new subject.
And I don't
know.
I
think that's your point.
Really independent. Recently, well, I don't know what that's going on.
Yeah, that's an issue.
That might not follow. Yeah. Yeah.
So that relates to school staff. Yeah. Who's
going to train you?
I'm still trying to get my Wi-Fi up.
All right. Where do you guys will take those last 5 seconds to kind of wrap it up, and then we'll come back here. I asked this question to PTA members not too long ago, and the number one answer was fishing. For some reason, that's kind of funny. They were taking up fishing, or the second one was baking. So like sourdough, I think a lot of people took up sourdough during COVID, so that was kind of a big thing. So I'm gonna turn it over to you guys. Let's start off with the first question is, what was one subject or one skill that you learned recently, or maybe something that sticks out to you? Yeah,
I'll share. I was one of those people that took up making sourdough during COVID, and I did it years ago, but hadn't for lots of years. And it was like, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
I could share it. It was one of those things that my family liked. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving, right? Is that you're getting enjoyment from it, but also people get to share it. That's awesome. What are some other, what maybe broader is, what helped you learn that subject? What helped you get back into sourdough?
That's a really good question. Probably a couple of things. I had more time at home,
okay.
Obviously.
Sure.
And I had a neighbor that had a sourdough start, and it's like, oh, I know, I can do this.
Sure.
I can get home.
So maybe the economy of time, right, is that you can engage with it, right? You can get into that subject, but also maybe having someone else that's coming alongside you and saying, hey, maybe this is how you ferment the dough properly. This is, maybe you should let this bake a little bit longer. That's great. Any other subjects or skills that have stuck out to you guys?
Oh, I just thought of one.
Sure.
It took me a minute. I've had to better understand my own tax statement so that having this new role, when people come to me with questions, I can answer them better. So Scott has done a lot of training with us on that.
Very
that
cool.
Has been helpful. So that is a new subject or skill I've had to
awesome.
Understand better.
Taxes.
Yeah, there you go.
That's awesome. And it helps to have an expert, right? Someone
yeah.
that's in front of you or someone that's actually interacting
like
with you.
I just like to clarify before I answer it on my own to make sure that.
And she picked a good year to do it because everybody's taxes in the county went down because
yeah.
of the school district. So everybody's happy right
they
now.
Should.
For sure. Everyone's kind of living happy in Morgan right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they're
so
all happy.
That's good to hear. So I think I heard someone ask this question, like, well, I'm not sure how this relates to the schoolwork, right? And so I think what we're going to see today is that the things that your school land trust plan does, the work that your councils are doing throughout the year, actually really help with these two things, right? Getting experts in front of you in a subject matter, but also time to engage in that subject. And so when kids or students get that time, we see them achieve. And that's really kind of the cornerstone of this program. So this is another thing I've added this year is that really the mission of the School Land Trust Program is this thing is to enhance classroom instruction and support student achievement. Right? is that we're putting in supports, we're putting supports in place so that the students can reach those goals that you guys have identified as councils, and even at the district level as well. Right? You guys are all kind of communicating, collaborating, so that this thing can happen here. And it's evident that is happening. Reading through your guys' plans, talking to your guys throughout the year. I think I saw you guys two times last year, right? One for plans, one at the beginning of the year. It's evident that you guys are taking time to do this. So I feel like I'm preaching to the choir today, so we gotta do, just to make sure that we're all on the same page, just communicate. So just a little bit of history about the trust lands. I make this joke every year, right? If you were listening in your Utah Studies class, you probably know that in 1896, Utah received statehood from the federal government. At that time, they also released parcels of land known as trust lands. And those trust lands are what generate the revenue for the trust land accounts that you see for your schools. So things like mineral use, things like grazing, things that generate any type of revenue on those lands get put into a permanent fund and are managed by these two entities at the top, the Trust Lands Administration as well as CIFPO. Both of those kind of collaborate together to generate revenue, as well as work, be, I guess, financially responsible for growing the fund so that it also, so it serves not only present-day students, but also you know, future students as well. And so a lot of people ask this question when I show this slide, is that, you know, the permanent fund is about like $3.4 billion. It's a huge amount of money, right? But we only distribute about $111 million a year. So this year we're slated to distribute that much money. One question I always get at conferences, well, why don't we just distribute more, right? Funding is tight in schools. So why don't we just give more? And the reason why is because it really has to do with the second arm of the program, is that we have to ensure money not only for present-day students, but also for future students. So as much as we would love to distribute the whole thing, right, and really fix a lot of things, we also have to be financially prudent with the fund as well. So just a little bit of behind the scenes and kind of an understanding of how that gets calculated and distributed. In Morgan, you guys are looking at about $703,000, which averages to about $226 per pupil at your schools. So we're getting seeing a little bit of an increase. This does not account for the recent amendment that passed last November. We'll see that bump in the next school year. So in 2026, 2027, we'll see that bump there. So we are asking councils to kind of be that communication point. If people ask about that, you guys would be the ones who answer that question. Cool, any questions about the distribution? And so money is great, right? But the reason why this program really works is because the school community councils. It's the principals working with the parents and the school employees at your schools to make sure that they're collaborating and making evidence-based decisions that help support that student achievement, right? And one thing that's special about these school community councils is that, one, it's protected by code and rules. So there's Utah code that's specifically for Utah councils, right? And it's also ensuring that the councils can do their important work, right? That includes making recommendations and advising on certain school-specific things. That could be school safety plan. That could be your TSSP. They're making input on all those things. But one, the cornerstone of the program is really that school land trust plan, which we'll touch on today. And also, we're going to talk about your guys' role in the review of those plans and what are some things to look out for. Andy also kind of requested that I talk about three major things. I'll be talking about council elections. So how can you set up your councils this year so that they're in compliance? We'll be talking about council membership, right? So who can be on the councils and what the requirements are those, for those, as well as some of the fall requirements. We'll be talking about rules of order and procedure as well and what you need to have for those. Just a heads up, our program will be doing a special kind of deep dive into rules of order and procedure. And so we will be emphasizing that a little bit more today in our talk. Cool. So what do school board members do? You're going to see these five colorful tiles all throughout my presentation. And these are really just the highlights of what you guys do as school board members. And this is how you really support the principals and their work throughout the year. So you'll be establishing policies and timelines. That first document that I gave to you guys is a, I think it's a couple pages, that represents a calendar for the whole entire year. And so I'll be kind of referring back to that. There's also a QR code on the back of that packet so that you can scan it and access all of those links that are on there for you. So you'll be in charge of those policies and timelines. You're also in charge of training, which you're already doing right now, right? You as a school board said, we would like Marcus to come down and do our training. So that's why I'm here. I also love that your principals are here too, because that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's just the board, sometimes it's just principals. But I think having that small kind of ecosystem does help with the training there. So school board members are in charge of that. You guys are also overseeing the program, so those are those program requirements, as well as the spending that's happening through those land trust plans. And you're also doing the financial financial assessment in your final reports. And the last golden tile is that council work for the school land trust plan. So we'll be touching on these five. These five responsibilities really do span the whole entire year. So you kind of start with the green tile and establishing things in summer or fall, and then ending with the school land trust plan in the spring. So let's jump into your first responsibility, which would be elections. I know you guys start school next week. Training is happening right now for you guys and stuff, right? So it's probably a good time to talk about elections. You, as a school board, are in charge of making sure that there is a clear timeline for those elections. So communicating with your principals and council saying, hey, we would like elections done by this time, or maybe it's a specific date that you guys want. This also includes establishing policies for electronic voting. So if you do not want to do secret ballots, like a paper ballot, I've seen some schools in like Alpine and different schools in the Valley still have like paper that they have in their front offices. Does anyone, do you guys have a policy for electronic voting? I didn't ask this last year, but I don't remember.
We don't have a policy.
Okay. Are schools doing it yet?
We do electronic.
You guys do electronic? So this might be like a resource sharing, right? Just making, look, find that best practice and say, hey, let's craft something so that we're all in alignment, making sure that's clear. So SEC elections can happen electronically, just making sure that you guys are all communicating with what's happening there. Your board also should have a policy for conflicts of interest. So if a council member has to report a conflict of interest, there should be a policy for that. You're also establishing deadlines. This happens on the school land trust website, as well as being communicated to your principals and staff. And you're also just monitoring throughout the year. One thing that we've recommended throughout the year for boards to do is to have financial communication throughout the year with their councils. So maybe sending a report of how much the school has spent of their land trust funds. That way, if there is a need for an amendment or something, then the councils know that they need to make an amendment and plan ahead. I know last time I was here, backup plans became a big topic of discussion. Hopefully that'll be helpful enough. You know, we won't see as many amendments or the need for the amendments this year, but we are recommending that districts do monitor finances throughout the year for the councils. And you're also in charge of defining and communicating school board priorities. I see this massive printout here. That's great, right? You're communicating those non-negotiables or those priorities, and so that's also influencing the council work as well, the school side. This brings us to the first round of requirements, is you as a board are going to be kind of overseeing the completion of these three requirements, which is your council membership form, your principal's assurance, as well as the school website postings. And the reason why I bring this up is because these requirements really do help with program transparency. All three of these requirements show that, one, who is on the council, right? Who are we communicating with, but also who is the public communicating with? They have questions about the plan and what the councils are doing. It's also signing off on elections, which we'll cover in just a moment. And it's also going to sign off on school website postings, right? So I noticed for Morgan specifically, you guys kind of have like the school district website. It's kind of like the big thing, and then the schools are connected to it. That's great. I think it's really easy for me to navigate. And so today will probably just be kind of like a checkup, right? Making sure you guys have those components for your websites. If you notice, on the top of your packet, there is a timeline. As I go through the different requirements, you can see that it's tied to different requirements throughout the year. And so you can kind of see, as we talked about, say, oh, okay, this is part of elections, this is part of October 20, and so on. So let's dive in. So first thing is your council membership form. This is due on October 20th. It's going to have the names of people on the council. It's going to automatically pull in the principal as a school employee member. It's also going to notify us about the membership type. So who is a parent member and who is a school employee member. We'll be covering those requirements in just a moment, and as well as their contact information. And just something that I noticed in my review from last year is that some councils and some school districts were having trouble updating this throughout the year. Just so that we're on the same page, make sure you do update that council membership form throughout the year. So if you change, like for instance, like an individual leaves, right, and they're still on the ledger, make sure that you do remove them so that we can make those changes. So that's the council membership form. You also have your principal's assurance form, which signs off on the election that put the council together. It's also signing off on council seating and making sure that that's in alignment with the code and rule, and it matches what was planned prior to the election. So your councils have a rule of order and procedure that's in place. Those rules of order and procedure dictate how the election is going to go for the next year. So we're just making sure that those are all signed off with the principal's assurance. Where do we submit these? If you are a new board member, you will get to know this website very well. This is the School Land Trust Program website. When you log in to the website, you will be able to see all the schools in your school dashboard. You're also going to be able to click on the individual schools. So here's Morgan High, and you are going to be able to submit, I guess the pink square here is where you'll be submitting it. Those two forms, the council membership as well as your consent. One question that comes up a lot is your CACUS information. This is one of the parts of our website that we're not always super happy with, but just so we're all on the same page, that part's actually communicating with CACUS itself. So if you want to change that info there, make sure you talk to CACUS. I do have a contact there, her name is Jane Conway. She is a great resource for that. So if you do have questions, I'm happy to answer them. Just so that we're on the same page. If you guys need to change a phone number, or if principals need to change a phone number or an email, please contact the campus. It is also important for us because that information gets pulled into the council membership form. And so we just need to make sure that's up to date. So maybe that's the first item of importance, making sure that those are done. You also have a printout. Principals also have this printout of your school website requirements. We have developed a checklist this year so that it should be a little bit easier to navigate and make sure that whoever your webmaster is aware of what all the requirements are. And so these updates must be completed to receive funding. And there are three major updates that you're going to be looking at. Where the school board kind of comes in here is that you guys can, the schools that you are assigned, it might be helpful to just do a quick checkup with your school and say, hey, let's look at your website and make sure that you have all the requirements there. So the first category we'll kind of cover is your one-time updates. This would include your invitation statement, right? So making a clear statement saying, hey, if you'd like to join community council, here's the information for it. And then one recommendation we're making is that all schools have their SLT public reports link tied to their websites. The reason why is because it really does fulfill three major requirements. It fulfills your council membership name and contact. It has a record of your SLT plans going back 5 years. And it also has your current year funding amounts. And so to kind of help with that, we are recommending that districts and schools kind of include that link so that when we do our checks, we have that information. So just as an example here, here's Morgan School. You can see that they have their primary contact, the funding amount, as well as a drop down here that allows the user to access all the plans going back 5 years. The requirement's only three, but the website goes back five, so it goes above and beyond what we're expecting in terms of program requirements there. So That has been help. I think that's a good best practice to have. It's not a requirement, but we would say, and, you know, just to make things easier, just include this link on your websites. You also have your annual updates. This is going to include your rules of order and procedure, which we'll talk about in just a second. But it's also going to include your means for public contact. So how does a parent in your school community contact the rest of the council members? It's also going to talk about the proposed meeting schedule, so you should have a clear listing of that, as well as the meeting minutes and the TSSP plan. A couple things, well, let's talk about frequent updates first. Your frequent updates, so these should be happening at least once a month, is your notice for your next meeting, which includes your agenda, as well as the draft minutes for the previous meeting that occurred. So there have been some questions, as I've been doing trainings for a year about meeting agendas. And one thing, or just a best practice for meeting agendas, is just if I was a parent in the community and I wanted to know what was going to be discussed, that's how much detail should be in the agenda, right? So it doesn't have to be a whole novel about what's going to be discussed. There seems to be simple titles and things, or topics. So I do have an example from Oregon High that we'll see in just a second. Your meeting minutes need to be kept for 3 years. This is the responsibility of the school to make sure that they maintain those. Most schools just do a Google Doc. That will suffice. That's good enough to keep a record of those. And also just those essentials like date, time, and place. A community member should be able to know where the meeting is going to occur, what time it's going to happen, and also who to talk to, right? It's the principal, who's the chair, those types of things. Your meeting minutes should also include any voting records. So if there's an action item on that minutes, making sure that you keep a tally of votes for yay, votes for nay, and absence. Because that actually helps me sometimes, because if I'm like scrambling for an amendment, I can actually look at those and just put it in the comments instead of hounding you guys for stuff. So those are always kind of helpful for me. Also, one other thing that we've been noticing is the guest list. We're recommending that councils kind of keep a ledger of who is a voting member, who is a non-voting member, and also who is a guest or someone who's like a guest speaker. Because oftentimes when we do look at the minutes, it's just kind of like a whole like list of people, but it's hard to see who's actually voting on things and who's not voting on things. So if you could make that a practice for your minutes, that'd be great. So let's look at an example here. This is from Morgan High. You can see that their meeting minutes are tied to a specific date and button that's easy to access. It also has a proposed meeting schedule, which is also great. So if I was a community member, I know exactly when those are going to occur. I can click on the agenda and know the date, time, and place, right? So there's no reason why I wouldn't be able to attend that meeting. If we look at the actual minutes, this is all the detail we need here, right? It's just, we don't need like a huge description of what was every word that was said at a meeting. We just need what was discussed, what was acted on, what was voted on. So this is a good example you guys have here. Appreciate the principal letting me use this example. Questions about meeting minutes or agendas? Website posting resource. You guys, both principals and school board members, have this resource in front of you. So this checklist might be helpful to kind of maybe print copies out for each of your schools and say, okay, we're just going to go through each checklist and make sure that we have each item there. I am happy to also look at websites too. So if I leave today and you send me an email tomorrow and say, hey, Marcus, I just want to make sure our website's in compliance, I'd be happy to give you guys some feedback and continue that conversation. So we did program timeline. We're doing this right now. Your second responsibility as a school board is to conduct training. That includes yourselves, which is what you're doing right now, but also your school committee councils. There are a couple ways to do that. One is you can have me come in. I do come to schools. So if you would like me to come to school and say, hey, our council's going to meet this day, I'd be happy to meet with you guys and do that, either virtually or in person, either way works. I'm also you know, you guys as school board members could train your councils and say, hey, look, we're going to take this meeting time to do the training and go through what I went through today. Or you can use my videos, or you can use statewide training that will be happening in October. So there's a couple options there, but if you feel like, you know, best option is me, I'm happy to support that.
We're so happy to hear.
Yeah, no problem. The third responsibility that you guys have is overseeing the program and spending. You guys oversee a couple of big ticket items. You oversee the formation of those SECs in the elections and their rules of order and procedure. You're also going to oversee their final reports, right? So making sure that spending, the report that's happening on the spending, or the report on the spending, is in line with what's being reported to us at the state. And you guys are also overseeing the upcoming plan process. Couple things to think about for your council elections. One is that the policies are set by the school board, right? So you guys need to communicate that to your councils and making sure that's apparent. It's overseen by the principals at the school sites. This could happen through secret ballot, or it could happen through electronic voting. And also, the procedures must be transparent to the school community. And there's a couple things to keep in mind here. One is that the time and date is posted 10 days prior to the actual election or the deadline for the election. It must identify what positions are open. So if you have like a 1 year term or a 2 year term, that needs to be communicated in the election literature. One thing that comes up every year is how do we boost engagement? I get the privilege of traveling around Utah and seeing every single district, and my answer is that all districts are different. You guys have different ways of engaging your communities. That's what makes it great. So, you know, I have schools that use their sporting events as kind of a tabling event for school community councils. I have schools that partner with the community center and actually do their meetings there so that parents can actually come to those meetings. There's a whole slew of things that happen there. So, I'm not sure what works for Morgan. I might have some ideas. If you guys, that is a question for you guys, I'm happy to talk about that with you. But I would just encourage you guys to think about what are those common points or those places where people are already naturally gathering and how do you communicate about it themselves. One thing you can also do is talk to your PTA. One thing that we've been trying to push this year at our presence when we go to PTA conferences is talking about how the two can actually collaborate. So maybe having a liaison from your PTA be on SEC and then vice versa, right? So that you have that communication there. So some ideas for boosting engagement. You also have the priority of including those election processes in your rules of order and procedure. Both the board and the principals do have a document that outlines a checklist. It says rules of order and procedure on the top there. This is just a good checklist for what are the different sections that need to be in there. There's also a link, if you guys go to the digital copy of this, there's also a link for a template that you guys can use that we've developed that checks off all those boxes. Council membership, you need to make sure that your councils have two member types. One is parent-guardian member. These are people who have children at the school for at least one of the 2 years that they have their term. They may not have an educator's license and work at the school. If they have both those things, they would be considered, your sons, what type of member? School employee member, right? So in order to be a parent member, they can't hold an educator license and work at that school. If they work at another school, they would be considered a licensed parent. Right? So there's a classification for that. The only stipulation is that if you do have a licensed parent, you can't have more licensed parents than non-licensed parents. Does that make sense? Are there a lot of licensed parents in Oregon for you guys?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. Sometimes it's like a uniform. I don't see them. Something to keep in mind. Your school employee members, these are people who work at the school. I think it was covered last year that this could also be school staff, right? So as long as they're employed by the district or at the school, they could be a school employee member. This also includes principals. So making sure that you guys are aware that you are a voting member on the councils that you're working on. In terms of numbers, your high schools are going to have 10 members. All other schools are going to have 6. And this can also change depending on your rules of order and procedures. So if your council says, you know what, like 6 is a little bit skim, maybe we need a little bit more, you guys can do that. Just make sure you vote on that before implementing it into your rules of order and procedure. I think some schools I've seen modify that. That's totally okay. Just need to make sure that's outlined in your rules. Questions about membership? I'll expect my inbox to be closed. All right. And here's a QR code if you guys do need a digital copy of that resource. Okay. Your rules of order and procedure specifically serves as a tool to be transparent towards your community members. So this allows them to know how council work is done and also how the council is formed. And so you're going to have your section that deals with election procedures. It's going to talk about the different types of members and who what the members do, as well as their term limits and their requirements. You're also going to need to have a section that outlines how council work is done. So that includes parliamentary order or Robert's rules. Those are our recommended sources, but if a council deems that they have a different way of doing it, they can do that. They're just going to vote on that before. Other things that need to be included in your election procedures section would be your staggered terms, as well as officer elections, so what's the process for voting for a chair, as well as your vice chair. And this last bullet point is kind of an important thing that we've noticed this last year is some schools have not included the process for removing members and how to fill those spots. That's kind of got them into some, not necessarily trouble, but in the event they do have to remove a member, it's become difficult when it's not outlined in the rule of order procedure. So by doing that, your council is protecting itself from, you know, an angry council member coming back and saying this is not due process. As long as the process is outlined, this should be helpful there. It also helps in the event where maybe a council member has to move unexpectedly or cannot fulfill their obligations. This is helpful for filling those vacancies that might happen throughout the year.
So, on that point there, the last, when we start our school year and we have our first one with all the information we share, is that a bullet point that we want to make apparent when we start into the process, into a school year?
Yes. I would say it would be best practice to have that outlined in your rules of order procedure from the get-go, right? So, I guess first step would be going back to your rules that are currently in place and seeing if that's there first. And then if it's not, then you would have to wait for that new council to come into place to have that discussion and then vote it into the procedure. So that's a good question. Great. So that is rules of order and procedure. A couple other things for you to kind of know as a board member is that you also do have some responsibilities in terms of school land trust spending. So one thing that we've recommended districts to do is have some type of process, whether it's a pre-verification or a post-verification process in how funds are spent. So this might include, if it's like a pre-verification process, schools might come up to you and say, hey, this is what we're gonna spend the money on. Your district liaison would say, okay, this matches what they report in their plan, and then they would approve this money. That would be a pre-verification process. You could have a post, which would be just a review of your final reports, making sure that what was reported matches what was planned for the previous year. So the school board does have that responsibility. I would also recommend just having that process in place and having a discussion around that. Like I said before, your budget communication is also an important thing here, so making sure that your councils know how much they've spent and also how much they have left to spend, right? So oftentimes that communication does kind of help with those amendment processes, making sure that there's any changes, like maybe an hourly wage wasn't fulfilled, then the councils have time to kind of change that and make sure that they can make an amendment. So I guess the big takeaway, just communicate about your finances, right? Making sure that both the council and the board know what's happening in terms of finances. Yes?
Well, one of the things that our schools have been doing that I think has been nice is they kind of, when they submit their plan, have an alternate. If this money isn't spent, you know, this is how it will be used. And that's been really helpful.
I'm excited to see, because that's kind of, I think that's pretty new, at least as far as I've understood. But in my review, I would say, yeah, I'm excited to see how that kind of helps. Maybe there's a conversation for later on in the year and saying, did it work? Did it not work? What works? So I'm glad to hear that. But that's working. There we go. Perfect. Yeah. Your fourth responsibility is really just setting due dates and timelines based on what you guys have in front of you there. So that includes due dates for their final reports, right? So you as board members are going to go into the SLT reporting website and set the due date for your whole district, right? And you're also going to communicate and verify that due date for your principals to make sure that they're aware that they need to submit their final reports, as well as their upcoming plans, right? So you're saying two dates for them, really. One is their final reports, the other is their upcoming plans. A couple other things to keep in mind is that a copy of the final report should be submitted to the school board by March 1st, right? So that gives you guys time to look at it and make sure that everything is in alignment with what was planned. And also, the way you guys set those due dates should keep our due dates in mind. So I think that's the March 1 due date for your final reports, as well as a May 15th due date for upcoming plans. So just giving time for me or for you guys to do your reviews, and then if there's any changes that need to happen, that those can occur quickly. Okay. I've shown this graphic before, but if you have been in the school land trust program for a little bit, you know that it's really three plays spinning at once, right? You're implementing your current year plan, you're doing a final report on the previous year, and then you're also planning later on in the year for the upcoming plan. So there are kind of three things happening at once, right? But I think hopefully these resources that I've given you today will kind of help you navigate it through the year. One recommendation I'm giving is the timeline that you guys have in front of you, just keeping that and just making it a practice to, you know, check off those items month by month. And your last responsibility is your school land trust plan. You guys are kind of in charge of reviewing those plans, making sure that they're in alignment with your district priorities, as well as in alignment with program requirements. So I'm going to cover some of those really quickly today. I think last year I ended up doing a training specifically on school land trust plans. So if you guys would like to do that again, I think that's a good way to do it. Let's keep, you know, keep those things fresh there as you're going. So let's dive in to your school land trust plan. Okay. I guess this is kind of my family feud type of game show moment here in the presentation. Last year I asked you guys the same question, and I'm going to ask it again based on last year's plans or your upcoming plans. So if we gathered all the Morgan School District receipts and purchases, what do you think the number one category is? Sorry? Personnel, right? What would you say number two is? This is where it gets a little more interesting.
Software,
okay. There's actually one thing that made Morgan kind of distinct from other districts that I was reviewing is a huge priority in literacy support, specifically literacy software. You guys across the board are putting in some really strong tools, I think, that I'm hoping will help your students, and hopefully you guys are seeing that data as well, right? So literacy supports, specifically those technology supports, are pretty distinct. It's not to say that not other districts are doing it, but I think across the board, seeing it at all your schools is a really cool thing. As a former middle school teacher, I quickly learned that, if anything, literacy is probably the most important thing. So I'm glad to see that. But you're also spending a lot of money on professional development, which I think is great. You're not just investing in the personnel, but you're also developing them as well. So I had a question from a parent recently who said, you know, why do we spend so much on professional development when we can do more events or enrichment activities? And our director said something really profound. She said, you know, it's great to have these events and, you know, maybe like these little prizes, right? But when we invest in the people that are actually teaching, that's a really important thing, right? So you guys are doing those things. You're investing in the people. You're also investing in the tools that they're using. And I would imagine that has a great effect. So your school land trust plans are in alignment with that, right? It's making sure that the student achievement happens through those supports, right? But also, when we ask AI, what do you notice about these plans? They see it, right? There's a strict emphasis on literacy and numeracy for you guys. And you guys are using RISE, ACT scores, Acadian scores, to really make sure that it's in alignment with your, or there's gains, right? That's actually working. So this is all based on the upcoming plans that you guys submitted last year. So I'm excited to see what happens in the final reports and what's reported on those. A couple things to consider when it comes to the review process. Those three gray boxes on the left are the creation process, so it starts with your council. Just as a reminder, the plans are developed by the councils, right? So there shouldn't be any situation where like the board is creating the plans for the schools. The cool thing about this program is that the council is going to make the plans. They know what's going on at the school level, and so they're creating the plans. And as it moves through that development process, it gets submitted to you guys, the LEA governing board, and then also your admin reviewer. It sounds like you guys have a structure here where each of you will be overseeing the school, so that's another level of accountability, which is great. And then ultimately it makes it to us at USBE where we do our final reviews. So a couple things to keep in mind in terms of the process is that it's data driven, right? Making sure that you're using that Acadian's data, that RISE data, ACT data, whatever it may be, to determine those academic needs. And then acting on those based on the data that you have there. A couple things to think about here in terms of academic areas. This district did a great job of kind of simplifying plans this year and making sure that, you know, we're not picking a whole laundry list of academic areas. I think one thing that makes a plan successful, as far as I can tell, is when you guys focus on specific academic areas, right? And you can use multiple goals to address those areas, but as far as I can tell from my review, you guys did a great job of not trying to like do the laundry list thing, right? You guys were specific, you guys were able to pinpoint those greater academic needs, and then creating those lists of accommodations or interventions that you're going to do for your students. Your goals, I don't really have much to say beyond that you guys did a great job. Your goal statements, right? Make sure they're really simple and they're not, I guess, too long. When you read, you know, 300 plus plans a year, it's a lot. So I do appreciate you guys making that process simple for us on our end. I'm sure the school board also appreciates that as well. So just making sure that, you know, those goal statements are simple. They don't have to address how you're going to do the goal. It just needs to address what you hope to achieve. Measurement, once again, like my AI tool said, right, you guys are using those specific tools like ACT scores, Acadians, RISE testing, right? One thing I do want to bring up, and this comes up every year, is that schools can use common formative assessments to address success. So if your teachers have tools that are already developed, you guys can use those in your reports, right? Making sure that, say, hey, there is growth, and here's how we need to move. So the CFA would count towards that measurement section. Action plan steps, we kind of covered that with backup plans, so I won't spend too much time on backup plans. But one thing to keep in mind, based on my review of the plans last year, is making sure that these two sections are in alignment. So sometimes like a number might be reported in the action plan step, but it doesn't match what's being reported in the expenditure table. Just make sure that those values are in alignment so that there isn't any confusion about how much is actually going to be spent. So action plan steps, one thing to think about is that this is the narrative, how you're going to complete the process. The expenditure table is just that ledger that we see of how you're going to, what money you're going to spend to address these things. Couple things to think about with allowable and unallowable expenses. Like I said at the beginning, right, this whole thing is about enhancing student instruction to support student achievement. So instead of reading off the laundry list here, right, just keep that in mind as you're reviewing expenditures. Does it actually support classroom instruction, right? Does it support that student academic achievement? And so when we look at things like unallowable expenses, these are things that we would have a hard time connecting that directly to. One thing that did come up statewide was incomplete grants. Sometimes we would see plans come up where they would say, we're going to set aside $25,000 for English teachers for a future project. That's fine. The only thing that we're going to be asking there is that you guys follow up with an amendment, right? Making sure that we have a clear picture of what those funds are going to be used for later. That's always a little gray area that we start to see some places, but I don't think I saw any plans on wording on that. So, gold star. There you go. Couple things. One other item. You might notice on my review document that the number one comment this year was about the council vote results. This is just making sure that whatever is reported on the school land trust plan is in alignment with what's reported in your council membership form. This is the reason why I brought the council membership form before, is that oftentimes schools would forget to like change that roster when someone moved away, when they added a new person, right? And so there was a misalignment with those numbers. And so when I go into my review, I don't know if it's 9 people or if it's 8. And so making sure that that council vote section that you guys fill out on the plan matches what's reported in your council membership. That was by far the number one reason why plans were sent back. To be honest, we know that that part of our website's not the strongest. So we are working with developers to kind of help address those issues. But one thing we do want to make sure is that you guys do have that in alignment there. Cool. We already covered the review process there. In the event where an amendment needs to happen, so maybe your council is going through the year and they notice that, you know what, we have an extra, $5,000 we need to spend. This would be a great case of the need for an amendment. There are some other places where an amendment might need to happen, so if there's excessive carryover, or if there's significant changes to spending, it needs to be followed up with an amendment. This also kind of relates to the school board here, is that you guys kind of determine your threshold for what you want returned back to you for an amendment. So if it's like, $100, right? Do you want that plan sent back to you? You guys have to make that call based on your experience. But we might not see this because you guys have backup plans in a lot of your school land trust plans. So I imagine we're not going to see a ton of amendments come through this year. Cool. Questions about the plan writing or review? All right. So what is next? So if you would take out that timeline that you guys have, you have a couple items that could be done in August. There's 3 major items here. One is making sure that you're arranging training opportunities for your SCCs. This would also include training opportunities for you guys, which you guys are doing right now. You are also assisting new schools. I know there's one new school in Morgan. Is that correct? And then we got Morgan Online. That's going to be.
That was during COVID.
Oh.
That's when it's been closed. I'm not sure why it's shut.
Okay, I see. Yeah. In the event where you a new school, this would be a chance to kind of help them out there. They do have that November 1st deadline. Also, you have your September deadlines. So this would include setting reminders about rules of order and procedure. This would also include reminders about your October 20th deadlines. I'll be sending out communications to you guys through my newsletter. So if you are not getting those right now, make sure you talk to me before I head out so I can put you on the email list and you guys have those communications for me. That's a good starting place, I think. I know at the beginning of the year it's really busy, so I don't want to overwhelm you guys, so I will leave the timeline with you, but I imagine that you guys will be referring to that and also communicating with me throughout the year. So, also, principals, I have a timeline specific for you guys, so if you guys would like to scan this QR code, this program timeline is specifically for you guys, and it outlines month by month what your responsibilities are, and also it kind of guides your council as well. So you can give, you can print this out, give it to your councils at the beginning of the year, and now we all have a timeline that we're following, and kind of following along here. I will follow up with an email to make sure that all these resources are for you guys. And also a good chance to kind of do a little advertising for myself. You can contact me if you have any questions. You can also send a group email to our team. And that's a fast way to do that, but I try to be the faster one out of my team, so please contact me. I also have a new resource for you guys. We have updated the School Land Trust website. So you might notice some differences here. I just want to do a quick training on this website because I think it's hopefully a more helpful resource for you guys this year. On the left side, you can see that it's broken up by different stakeholders. So in this case here in the room, you would see district administrators, district school board, as well as your district principals. I'm just going to do the district principals link here. And what's helpful, is it does outline your responsibilities as a principal or as your stakeholder or as your role, but it also has a tab for training resources. This is a good place for you guys to go to if you have the need for questions about, like, well, how do I complete my rules of order procedure, or how do I complete my plan, or maybe questions about your final reports, right? These are great resources here. Also, the training tab or training resources tab . This is kind of our training library. And what we've done is we've kind of broken it up by each individual program requirement. So you can find, you know, all resources that are related to elections, or all resources that are related to website postings. All that's here for you guys as well. So that is also included on your QR codes in the digital copy. So there's a link to that as well. So I think that's all I got for you guys. Any other questions?
Cool.
It's always good to see you guys. And the familiar smell of popcorn as I walked in, so appreciate it.
Marcus, thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time to come up, and what a great job, because you relayed it right to us, and we appreciate that. And there is some bread and a little plate and some jam just on Jenna's desk right there that you're
sourdough
welcome
bread.
To.
And popcorn.
Sourdough bread and another, and just some wheat bread. But yeah.
Thank
you're
you again.
Welcome to
great
grab
job
that on your way out.
Be careful traveling home.
Thank you.
And for everyone else, when we do a break, and we're going to keep this short so we can get a break, you're welcome to help yourself to some bread jam. Okay, so I think we'll just kind of, the board training that I have planned is short, but I want to make sure that we get to number three. So we're just going to do one little portion, and then if we have time, because I want to stop right at 10:02 and give everybody a break. But the one thing that I've emphasized over and over, and we've talked about over and over, is that all of us should be able to actually just verbalize our strategic plan. So I want you to just take 10 seconds without looking back at the board behind us and see if you can name the parts of our Morgan County School District strategic plan. Get them in your head. And then board member Brooks, you get to say them out loud.
Without looking at your paper. Communication, safety, support, learning, and engagement.
Okay.
Did I miss one?
Well,
I
connection. Just connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just say,
connection.
I think it came out. Like, I didn't.
Okay.
Didn't
so,
come out, I think. Like,
thanks.
I
and we'll probably do that. Every training meeting that we have, we just... You know, we want our...
Oh, look, I've had it pulled up the whole time.
We want our administrators, our kids see this a lot. We want to make sure that we actually are really familiar with that, too. And that, I mean, that's going to help us in doing just what Marcus said today, that we make sure that everything coincides with our district plan. I'll tell you the other two things that were on my little short training. I'll just tell you what they are, and if we have time, we'll go back to them. If not, I'll just push them back until the next time. From Robert's Rules of Order, I want all the board to understand that any board member can use point of order during a board meeting, and if we don't have time to get back to it, you can kind of look that up and we'll talk about it next time. And the other portion that I was going to talk about is the Dignity Index, which is something that years ago at the USBA conference, there was a presentation on that, and I think that's important for us to take a look at that. Let's jump to number three, board compensation and expenses. And Scott, can I turn a little bit of time over to you, because you kind of know the history of what we've done and when, and then we'll just have a little bit of discussion around that.
Sorry, I don't have a specific timeline, but just generally, our board compensation, we increased a few years ago to align with the cost of insurance that's available. We were in a situation where the insurance premium was greater than the compensation, and so those board members who took the insurance actually were having to pay to be on the board, and so there was an increase done, and that's the only increase that I know of in recent memory, for board pay to align it with that amount of the health insurance for family insurance.
Okay, correct. And that basically almost doubled what the board compensation was prior to that, because prior to that, board compensation hadn't been looked at for, I would say, decades. Not just a few years, but decades. So, and it's really a difficult thing, because that has to be a board decision, and it's always hard to say, let's vote ourselves a pay raise. But we had a conversation back then, and it was Adam Toon that brought up the fact too, not only that, you know, it would be able to pay the insurance premium, but also that we want a board member is probably never going to be like a high paid position, but we also don't want it to be so negligent that there's not anybody in the county willing to take a look at being a board member as well. So that was something that Adam brought up. And my only thought, and this was where I would also like a little bit of feedback from Scott, is would it be wise to do something every couple of years, like a cost of living increase like we do for employees, so that we don't get to that point where it hasn't been done for decades again, and then when we have to do some compensation, it's a big jump and it's a big deal. So just thoughts.
Yeah, I think when we talked about it before, it's tricky because you guys are in a tricky spot. And I have a survey from 2020 kind of comparing to other districts. Lots of other districts have a salary per board meeting. They, you know, they have a compensation amount for the other meetings that are gone to. We're on the low end, which, you know, is okay. That's where we've been, but yeah, there might be some wisdom in having some sort of an inflationary consideration. Ultimately, it's always going to be an awkward vote for the board.
Absolutely. So, do some of the other board members have some feedback or some comment or some thoughts about that? Because that was just my thought, is, you know, should we do something at least maybe every couple of years to kind of do a cost of living, or to keep it from getting
and then negative again.
I like your idea of reviewing it regularly, so when it comes up, it's not like once every 10 years, like just like we review all the other finances and positions.
Okay, yeah.
Board member, I don't know, this is super uncomfortable and awkward, like you said. I understand both sides of it. I wish there were a way that it wasn't like us voting for it ourselves. I feel like a politician in that sense. But I guess my concern is that we just recently went through a RIF. So I don't know, in good conscience, I don't know that I feel comfortable and, I don't know, how to explain it.
Well,
not being very articulate with it, but like I understand the cost of living part of it and everybody's time that is spent with different roles and responsibilities, visits, committees, different things, but I don't know. I just think it's an uncomfortable thing, and I don't know that I support it just based off of like we're so tight right now, that and where we've had to do that reduction in force. You know, I just makes me even more uncomfortable about it.
I think, you know, that's a point well taken. Let's do this because it's time for our break, and we're going to break. Let's just say, If you'll just shoot me a message of, you know, if you didn't have a chance to get input, and by the way, board member Wallace is excused for family things today, so I'll ask for her input too. So if you'll shoot me just your input, then it will either be on the agenda next month for a discussion, or we will say, you know, not for two more years, because this is kind of on a 2-year cycle. So,
but if you keep going the 2-year cycle, then you're back to the a large conversation.
Yeah.
And the RIF has nothing to do with the money pile, this and that. They're not in the same category. And if you just keep going back, then we'll be facing what we did for the last 20 years. So it's never going to be good.
Give me just send me a message with your personal feelings, and then we'll go with what the majority feels like as to whether we will have it as a discussion item next week.
You would prefer that way, text or email?
Text or email, I don't care which.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, and we'll just recess from our work meeting and meet back here at 5 p.m. for our regular board meeting, and go help yourself to something, Jim.
Yeah. I might have to wait till after for that. I have a real talent for choking during board meetings.
I'm popcorn red. Well,